Hi guys, and welcome to Night Lock. This is the podcast dedicated to the Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. My name is Matt.
And I'm Kira.
And we are your wonderful hosts for this podcast. This is our sixth episode, so today we will be focusing on chapters 8 and 9, with some news stories. But first, we really want to apologize for our little sporadic things that happened in episode 5 where we were stuttering. We had a bit of audio problems, so if you guys could just disregard that, that would be fantastic, and hopefully we'll fix that so it won't be a big problem. Alright, we also want to give some shoutouts to the listeners out of our country, which is the US, such as the UK, Singapore, Germany, Canada, Australia, Puerto Rico, and we can go on and on. So the segments we have today include Pan and Post, Through the Eyes of Katniss Everdeen, Mads Maudie's Music. We're bringing back the What Who Said That segment, just for some kicks today. And so we're going to start with the news segment. And so, we are going to move on to the message from our sponsors. This is a new segment that Kira has come up with. This segment is where we read messages from you, which is our listeners. And this includes emails, tweets, posts, comments, and all of the great stuff that we get every day.
So we've had a lot of different messages through all those social interactive sites. So the first one is from Dreamer, and she writes, "Loving your podcast. Wow, episode 4 was like a podcast recommendation show. Demigod's Lie, Smart Mouse, Fireside Chat, Rebellion Radio, MuggleCast, all some of my favorites, by the way. I think you guys should get Cheering Kids just like SM Podcast. It'd be so funny." Smiley face. "It would also be awesome if you guys could do a joint episode with Rebellion Radio. Your loyal, loving listener, Dreamer."
Well, Dreamer, we
have a little announcement.
We
to
actually make. just 20 minutes ago, we talked with Hurley Commons, who runs Rebellion Radio.
He's
one of the hosts, and so we did a whole live Skype chat. It was very exciting, and so
the plan is so far is to have a joint episode with their hosts and ours, and we are going to do a trailer analysis.
So whenever the trailer comes out, that Saturday when it comes out, we're going to be recording, so make sure you keep a lookout for that. We're really excited to do
so this. And we'll give you an update on the Twitter, on the Facebook, maybe even Tumblr, you know, who knows. So, keep a lookout for that. And as for the Cheering Kids, I'm looking into that, and so we can kind of randomly have them on the show at certain points.
Like a little SM memory there.
Yeah, so, because one of my favorite podcasts, so. And yeah, so you should listen to all those podcasts, guys. It was really cool. So, thank you, Dreamer, for submitting that. That was really great to read and got us really excited, so.
And so, this one is from Poppy1423. She says, "I love this podcast, and I love how they have a segment for music." Oh, thank you very much. Because I, like Matt, have a thing for classical music. Well, Poppy, that's probably one of the first times I've actually heard someone... we heard someone say that. And so it's just really cool how they how you like classical music just as myself. I'll try to get more classical music stuff in.
This episode
won't have one.
But definitely next one we're gonna have classical.
Yeah. And so hopefully I'll get some ideas because I start orchestra tomorrow. It's my first rehearsal, so if I hear any good music that I like, might put it in. We'll see. Also, Poppy mentions that you guys need to get your facts straight. Just little details here and there, but after a while, they get kind of annoying. Oh, thanks. "I love this podcast and will continue to listen. Just little stuff like how the career districts are 1, 2, and 4, not 1, 2, and 3. Or someone said that District 12 was really close together, but it really isn't much. But you do bring out a lot of points I like. For instance, the size of District 12, that was interesting. Matt needs to finish reading the books, but all over good, funny podcast."
And she wrote that before you
She
didn't
wrote
finish
before
series.
Before I didn't finish them.
It was only the first two episodes or something you didn't.
Yeah.
But, so I thought this was a really great review that had kind of highlighting of what we need to work on, criticism, and stuff that we do well and everything. So yeah. I think this is a great example of a really great review that helps us improve and also helps us kind of see what you guys like in the podcast. For instance, this listener likes the classical part. So if you could send in what you like, you can go on iTunes and review us, and we can even read your thing on the show if you have a good input.
Guys,
so.
Yeah, we really love reviews. It just helps us so much with our podcast. So if you have anything to say, you can email it to us at nightlockpodcast@gmail.com.
Tweet us.
Tweet us at nightlockpod. Tumblr us or whatever.
Nightlockpodcast.tumblr.com.
Kira hands all of that.
But, yeah, so, anyway.
And so now, move on to our well-known segment, which is, the Pen and Post. Whatever. We'll play both.
So that was supposed to be for our mail segment. I don't know.
Wait,
if anyone...
we had a mail segment?
Yeah, that's what we just did. Message from our sponsors.
I thought
mail.
That was for the Pen and Post. Oh, never
no,
mind.
It's all right.
Whatever.
Anyway, yeah, that's for our mail
that
segment.
That was a bit of a Blue's Clues for you guys. If you guys remember that, that was Steve's last episode.
Yeah.
With Blue's Clues.
Quite
embarrassing. But I put the link there.
Oh, sorry.
You didn't warn me.
Anyway, blooper number one. No. Okay, so Pen and Post. Our first story is in an interview with Inquisitor.com, Lenny Kravitz explains Cinna, who he will be portraying this March as nurturing Savagile?
I have no idea. Swangly.
So anyway, so that word is defined as a person who, with evil intent, manipulates another person. So, Matt, do you think Lenny Kravitz explains Cinna in this way? Do you think that that's kind of correct?
Is defined as a person who, with evil intent, manipulate. But Cinna doesn't. If Cinna manipulates people,
He doesn't necessarily manipulate people. He manipulates the capital, I think, in the rebellion sense.
Well, that's what everyone's trying to do, but he's manipulating it through a sense of clothing and style.
I think it was weird that he put him that way. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's kind of clever that he wrote nurturing, like this whole manipulated thing.
But nurturing, that means he's like fostering it in a sense. He's like trying
true.
To like.
So that was kind of interesting when I read that. I thought I'd kind of add that in there.
I don't understand why. That I don't think that makes much sense.
It does make sense though, because Cinna is manipulating the capital in the sense that he's going against what he should have done. Like, he's making Katniss look this elaborate, costumes, and with, she's on fire, and, he's bringing attention to that, and that helps Katniss rebel because all eyes are on her and everything, so it does make sense. It's a little out there, but, hopefully this, it might make sense more later in the series, but we'll see. So, but next news story is thecapital.pn is a new website from Lionsgate, and fans can connect through your Twitter or Facebook to be assigned to a district through the Citizen Registration Terminal.
Ooh.
So, I don't know if you've been
cool.
on this website.
I've never tried it.
Okay, the aesthetics are amazing on this website. It is so the Capital. Like, I went on to it, and I, like, got chills from it. It looks awesome. And even the, I don't want to say music, like, sound effects on there, is really great. And so you sign up and it's free, and so you get assigned a district, and there's no like quiz or anything to see like which you fit in. They just give you one. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know, I think it might have to do where you live in the US, and maybe that's where they put you. I'm not really sure.
Well, that's a shame because District 13 was obliterated.
Yeah,
so
but
pretty much not placed.
Yeah, but yeah, so there's lots of cool stuff on the website so far, and we're not exactly sure what it is so far, but what we have is that there are three statistic areas, which include the number of people within each district, the amount of product being created by each district, and the amount of tessera claimed by each district. And the site also includes the product made within each district, and this is the first time we're seeing a complete list of them. And so this is a huge step in the fandom in that we've never seen a complete list. We've always wondered what does District 5 do? It's never, Collins has never like explained and spelled that out to us.
Right.
So this is the full and complete list. So District 1 is luxury. 2 is masonry, 3 electronics, 4 fishing, 5 power, 6 transportation, 7 lumber, 8 textiles, 9 grain, 10 livestock, 11 agriculture, and 12 mining. So I thought that was so cool that we got to find this out, because we don't know. This is very small spoiler that the whole series, it doesn't give you a complete list. So I thought after I finished the series, oh, I'm never going to be able to know. And that kind of, that bugs me. I just wanted to know a complete
list.
You just
need to know everything.
So here it is, and we know it now. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to check that out, it's thecapital.pn, and the PN stands for Panem. Just if anyone didn't catch on to that, so.
Okay.
Hey, you know, some people.
Okay, Kara.
So, and our, I think this is our last news story, right? Yes. Our last news story is the biggest one, and filming for The Hunger Games is officially over. So, they
That's
finished,
sad.
You know, right, you know, a couple days ago or so, and, so Lionsgate had a press release. And I'm quoting them here. Filmed entirely in North Carolina, the location spanned from a dense forest in which the arena that hosts the games themselves was created to a town that stood for Katniss's home, District 12, to a soundstage that was the platform for the fantastical sights and sounds of the capital. The futuristic capital city of Nation of Panem, principal photography of...
Photography,
I don't... Okay. on the 84th day, production began on May 23rd. It has been an absolute thrill to watch The Hunger Games, a project that has truly become part of Lionsgate's DNA since our
acquisition
of the book in 2009 came to life. What I observed on set was impressive on every level and reinforced my confidence that we will have assembled precisely the right team to bring Suzanne Collins' brilliant novel to the big screen. And so Joe Drake said that from Lionsgate, and so that's, and he's the motion picture group president,
and
so he's
the,
high up there.
Co-chief operating officer.
Yes, I didn't know what that stood for.
Yeah.
So I thought, I mean, it's weird to like think like they're done filming, like, and we haven't experienced any of it, and for them it's done. It's
like they've
surreal.
Seen everything already.
Yeah, they've experienced the whole thing, and it just, and there's.
It's kind of
they're
like
saying
how,
that there will be no reshoots, so of course that might change, but for the time being, it's officially done. So it's crazy.
It's
that's
like,
all I can say.
It's like we know they're keeping it so secret. Like they're not showing us any real pictures of everybody. They're not showing
there
us.
There is
any...
one picture that I was gonna mention in the news segment, but I was like, oh, I'll leave it out. That there is a picture of Katniss. Or Jennifer Lawrence as Katniss, with two film guys behind her, and it's just kind of whatever. She's not looking at the camera and everything, and so they did release that. But other than that, you know, just
like
the pictures from
like
EW
Effie
and
or,
yeah, I think what they'll do is after the I think the trailer will be the next thing that comes out. And we've said before on the podcast that Abduction is Lionsgate's next big film that comes out September 23rd.
We never
I believe.
Said that. We were talking
and
to Hurley when we said that.
No, I'm saying we've talked about Abduction and how... Yeah, we have. Listen.
No,
Abduction is Lionsgate's next film, as I said. So Lionsgate is going to reveal the trailer for Hunger Games with their with a big movie of theirs so that people will go see the movie, whatever. So I think this will be when it comes out. So that's what a lot of people are speculating. So we'll see. But when that comes out, look for us that weekend for our review trailer show analysis. So our next segment is our, you know, main segment here.
Through the eyes of Katniss Everdeen.
And so we summarize what happened in the chapter along with interpretations of characters within the chapter, foreshadowing future events, our thoughts, questions, comments, and we also bring up some speculation. So last episode, well, not last episode, two episodes ago, we discussed chapters 6 and 7, so today we'll continue with chapters 8 and 9.
Right.
So, take it away with chapter 8, Matt.
Okay, so, we start out with the Katniss, after the judging with the Game Makers, just laying in her room, and she starts crying because she feels like she's completely screwed up, and that she doesn't know what she can do after this. She feels like she can't go back.
She feels like she's not going to get a good score.
Exactly. And she goes, what does it matter? It's not like I was going to win the games anyway. Who cares what they do to me? What really scares me is what they might do to my mother and Prim. How my family might suffer because of my impulsiveness. So, right, this is like I think this is the first time we see Katniss actually cry and actually tell the reader how she feels on an emotional side.
I think she kind of is in so denial of feelings and she's like in survival mode that this is the first time that she's by herself, and she lets it all out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's just, she also considers the fact that if no one sponsors me, my odds of staying alive decrease to almost zero.
And I think that is true. Like, if something happens to you, you know.
She's mostly worried about her score because she knows that the score is what decides on you being you getting sponsors, and sponsors are what keep you alive, basically.
So at this point, did you think that she was going to get a bad score, or like what you thought she was going to get a bad score?
Yeah, because there wasn't like, obviously they saw her precision when she was shooting the arrow.
Yeah.
Because it had hit directly at the pig, but I think they were, I was thinking that they were too enraged with her to actually consider that, and then we realized later on about that. So moving on, she finally decides that she needs to go out to dinner because that's when the scores are going to be released. And then as soon as she sits down, you have Hamish trying to like lighten the mood, and he understands how upset she is. So she says, somehow Hamish calling me sweetheart ticks me off enough that I'm at least able to speak. And so she says, a shot and error at the game makers. Now, I find this really funny how she just blurts it out and everyone just stops eating.
Yeah.
And they look directly at her. It's like one of those scenes where it's like one of those sitcoms.
Yeah.
Where they say something and all of a sudden everyone just stops and just looks at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was funny too. And then they're trying to console her and saying that it's not a big deal, don't worry about it. Then they can't hurt you or hurt your family because they have no proof on the population.
Right. Because
they're not televised.
That's the only part that isn't televised.
That's the only part that isn't televised. So then she says to the reader, she says, I remember how I promised Prim that I would really try to win, and I feel like a ton of coal has dropped on me. And this is, I chose a specific quote because it just reminds me of families and how you have to live up to your commitments. Just to, like for younger siblings, you tell them everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
You have to stay with it. You have to support them. You have to be the bigger person. And she told Prim that she's going to do everything she can to win the games when she already knows inside her head that she's not going to.
No, I mean, yeah, what's the chance of her winning against an 18-year-old that's all buff and everything?
Right.
I like how she said, I feel like a ton of coal has dropped on me. Like, that's kind of reflecting back on how coal is her life. Like, that's District 12, and, like, that's kind of the first thing she thinks of, too.
Right. So if you were in Katniss's position, Kira, and you were trying to tell Prim that everything's going to be all right, would you break down crying, or would you try to be the strong
I think I would person? Start tearing up, but I would try and act like I wasn't. Like, you know when, like, a mom will, like, if something's happening, like, I'm just thinking of, like, times when my mom, like, something would happen, and she's, like, kind of trying to, like, just pretend like nothing's happening and just kind of starts laughing or something, and, like,
yeah.
I feel like that's what I would do. I would kind of, like, I would tear up because, like, I couldn't help that, but I would try and, like, hide it and everything to the best of my ability. But how about you?
Well, first of all, yeah, I don't have a younger sibling, so it doesn't really...
Okay, well...
But, okay, if I did.
Your cousins, like, pretend...
Oh, God, that'd be awful.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
That's what I was thinking
of when
I was...
That would be extremely difficult, because you're thinking to yourself, this is the last time I'm probably going to see them.
Yeah.
This is the last thing I'm going to say to them. What do I say? I have to be strong so they know that I have a chance against...
I wonder if a lot of tributes, like, commit suicide before this. Because, I mean, what's the chance? Say you're, like, Rue, for instance. Maybe a little bit older. Say you're, like, 16, and you're, like, the size of Rue, and you're just really small girl or something. And you know you're gonna die. Like, what... I wonder if there are, you know, tributes that just end up committing suicide. Because it's just too stressful and... The emotions are just so intense, like, killing yourself would be better in their eyes than having to survive through the Hunger Games.
Yeah, that's completely understandable, but, so it's like, you just have to think about that, because if you have someone, like, you have a 12-year-old, if Prim was in there,
yeah,
I mean, Prim is a strong person because she has her father's determination, she has her mother's skills and everything, but you have to think her age and size, like, Rue. I'm surprised Rue is strong enough to handle it. I'm sure Rue probably broke down crying, and
oh yeah,
before that she probably thought about it. I mean, who wouldn't have thought of killing themselves? Would you rather?
But I think if you're Rue's age, you don't think of that. But say if we were like at our age now, like kids like our age,
right,
they would think of that. So, and say in Katniss's shoes, she has to be the provider and everything. But if you have a family, like a regular unit family with a dad and a mom, and your kid 16 gets chosen, you know, you don't have, there's no reason that you have to go back to like support someone. It's just your mom and dad can do that for you. So I feel like that might happen. And it's surprising that Suzanne doesn't kind of go into that. I think,
because
I mean, the whole book is really intense, so it's not like that would be something too intense to put in.
I was thinking about this while I was reading the chapters. I noticed that her language of literature, like her writing style, is very general.
It
doesn't go into any specifics. Like, it's a very, she makes the book seem so intense, but then again, her writing isn't.
It's all like between the lines that is so intense. It's her simplicity that makes it like, oh my god, like how Katniss, like back in chapter one when she was like, yeah, my father's dead. Like, that made it intense. If she started going on and on about it, then it wouldn't have been so,
like, I thought hours late and awake, hours and night.
Yeah, like, she just said, my father blew up. Like, that was it. And it was like, whoa. It made you like, oh my god, like.
It kind of reminds me, it just, yeah. That's all you can really think of about it. And that's the kind of writing style that Suzanne would really want to have.
Yeah.
Because you want the reader to think all the time. Constantly, like, the tension between her and PETA, the fake relationship, and then her and Gale, she talks generally about it. She doesn't. You don't really see what Katniss is thinking. You can't really.
Even though it is in Katniss's point of view, you're still not
right
fully seeing. I think you are fully seeing what she's thinking. She just has
a way
kind
of
filtered
it.
Thoughts because she doesn't want to think certain things and start getting emotional and everything.
Well, you have to remember, she's a protected person. She's very closed off. She doesn't want to let anybody in.
She builds
in.
That barrier.
Mm-hmm. She builds that barrier after her father's death, as any child would. Because the father figure is something. Daddy's little princess, go to your father when you...
She was daddy's little warrior,
She was daddy's little warrior. Okay. So it's just like, after her father died, she had no male figure to really look up to really go to for anything.
Well, she had Gale, but that was more of a peer relationship.
Well, Gale was more of just like, she met Gale after. Way after. So between that time, between her father's death and Gale, she had nobody.
But.
So, moving on. Katniss ends up scoring an 11 on her assessment. And PETA's, we're not doing the chickens. And PETA scores an 8. So, Katniss questions this herself, and then you have Haymitch giving his little comments. Guess they liked your temper, he says. They've got to put a show on. They need some players with some heat. So,
oh, she's going to bring on the heat. Fire's going to be catching now.
The girl who was on fire. Yeah. Yeah, man. So it's like, oh god, I don't know how to explain this. That's just Haymitch. Like, Haymitch just takes so complex situations.
He's
like,
their sarcastic drunk. That's who he is.
He takes such complex situations, goes, eh, well, I guess they liked your temper. So, good job, bud. And then Katniss remembers, I wonder what Gale would have said. Gale would have probably said, oh, you could have done better. Let's work on that. I find that funny, too. And then after that, Katniss focuses on the memory between her and Gale and how they met, which took place in the middle of winter in the woods. And Where else would they be? And so, it's explaining how Katniss is admiring his snares and how he's so well at creating them, and he admires her bow and arrow skills. And then they start
archery skills. Correct. Grammatically.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. Yeah. And so, what was I saying? Oh my god. Fill me in here.
You're talking about how they met in the woods.
Talking about in the woods. Oh, and then they're talking about how they're, she says how they're going to provide for each other's families and creating the double gain. And she says the one time she ever saw him smile, the first time she ever saw him smile was when he asked to see her bow and arrow. And she says stealing is punishable by death, as Gale had said to her before. And so she said, that was the first time I ever saw him smile. It transformed him from someone menacing to someone you wish you knew. But it took several months before I returned that smile. And that last sentence, again, is the barrier. It's the walls being like the way your facial expression is right now. Just like nothing.
I'm thinking.
I know.
I don't need a facial expression for an audio podcast, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And so, and then she says, but he turned into so much more than a hunting partner, huh? Hunting partners are hard to come by these days.
Right.
He came by confident, someone with whom I can share my thoughts. I can never voice inside the fence.
And share my love.
Being out in the woods with Gail, sometimes I was actually happy. Right. There you go. You have the conflicting Gail Pita thing.
Yep. And it's going to keep going on and on all book.
All series, actually.
Oh, maybe. And so, we'll see, right?
Right. And so the last sentence that I put was, she says, I just miss him. I hate being so alone. Does he miss me? He must. So, okay, Katniss. So you're saying, I feel nothing towards him. He's just a hunting partner.
I just miss him, though.
I just miss him so much. Okay.
I just want to smell him one last time.
Smell of the woods. Okay, hon. Maybe you should rethink your relationship-wise. So, and then to sum up the end of the chapter, Peeta tells Haymitch that he wants to be coached separately from Katniss because, yeah, and you're going to talk about that in Chapter 9. So, that was Chapter 8. It was a little bit short because it wasn't much going on. It was just all the internal conflicts that were going on in Katniss's head.
Yeah.
And basically, just her laying on the bed, crying. Yeah. And that's like one of the weak...
I can relate.
That's one of the weak chapters.
It's more of a filler chapter.
Not weak writtenly, like, weak as Katniss is. Like, showing Katniss's weakness. Yeah, that's how I word it. Okay.
So, Chapter 9. So, as Matt just summed up, Peeta has been asked to coach separately. So Katniss is feeling betrayed by Peeta's decision, but there's mixed feelings with it. So what was the whole point of being a team and then training separately other than the lover boy angle? Like, why would they want to be coached separately, Peeta?
Well, because I was just going to say this, but then I decided not to.
Okay.
Because after Peeta saw her score, he sees her more as a threat now.
You think so?
To be honest, yes. Because Peeta thinks he's supposed to be the strong person in this team.
Right.
Because he's the male dominant figure.
The physically strong one.
The physical.
Okay.
And so after he got an A, he goes, okay, well, Katniss has to do worse than I am. Because that's just like the way he should be thinking. And so when she scores an 11, he starts thinking, well, maybe she's better than I thought she was. And then he's trying to come up with a plan to get Katniss a bit weaker.
Maybe. Really? See, I disagree on that. I think that he wants to train separately because he sees how well Katniss can excel in the Hunger Games and how she has the potential to really win, and he doesn't want to drag her down.
That could be too.
Because he loves, like, at this point, we don't, I mean, if you, looking at the whole book and then looking at this pinpointed chapter, we know he loves her. So, if you're looking back, you see that he loves her and he's trying to protect her and giving her all the support from Haymitch, and that he would just weigh her down because he got, what you said, an 8.
Yeah.
So he got an 8, and that he doesn't have any special skills like archery or knives or anything or snares. So he wouldn't contribute to anything.
Right.
So I think he's trying to protect her. And you're thinking he's more of a selfish way for the time.
I mean,
for this Peeta, moment.
Peeta's not a selfish person.
He's, no, he's not. But just no for this way. Moment.
In this moment, because it's a competitive thing. Remember, he's one of, what, three brothers?
Yeah.
He's one of three brothers. He's used to being competitive. He's used to trying to be the best, trying to outsmart, trying to be outshine everybody again to try to impress his mother.
Or Katniss, which never notices him until now.
Yeah. But I'm also thinking that, I'm just thinking about this now, that Peeta could have a different plan in his mind.
Right. Well, he has the whole lover boy angle
in
his mind.
Well, he's trying to think of another way to see if he can get... He's trying to play, ask Image if he can get more sponsors. Another way that can attract the audience's attention.
Hmm. But do you think the lover boy angle was more beneficial towards him or Katniss when he thought of it?
Probably more beneficial towards Katniss. Because I don't know, that's hard because it can work either way because the audience doesn't know them. Obviously it could have given an edge to PETA because Katniss was working the audience at the ceremony.
Right. Which we'll get into a little bit later.
And the outfits all just got them in general, but
I think it's about equal. Like, I don't think any one of them could have gotten because more.
Who doesn't love a good romance?
Right.
In this type of situation. So, obviously, the audience... Okay, here
they
you
thrive
have...
on
here
it.
Here you have Kato and Clove, who we know nothing about, but then we have Katniss and Peeta.
Yeah.
The young couple that's in love are gonna fight to the death, even though they still love each other. Which one are you gonna watch more?
Yeah.
So, and that could have been a big thing for it.
Because if it was all about of them splitting up as a team for the time being, if it was all about the lover boy angle, couldn't Haymitch have just spoken to PETA about that separately and not have Katniss know, but they'd still in cahoots together and everything? So there had to be something else other than that lover boy angle for him to want to split off.
Has to, yeah.
So.
It can either be what you said, trying to protect her.
Protect.
Or it can be me.
Or protect
or
himself.
Or protect himself.
That's interesting. That's Send nice. Us your feedback. So anyway, good discussion going. Katniss has to learn to walk around in high heels, and the dress gets in the way, but she can't hitch it up. So we see Katniss's girly side here
which
and her attempt to it.
Which is extremely lacking.
Yes. I can totally relate. I'm so not dressy, girly.
Well, I can't relate, because I certainly hope I don't have to wear high heels or dresses.
Oh, I can't walk in high heels. It's a mess. I tried once. Not a good idea. Yes, totally flats all the way.
Well, if you get married, you have to walk in high heels.
Yes, that should be... Well, I could have flats. It might work. Or if we're on the beach, you just bare feet, you know?
You
anyway.
Could have money to get married on the beach. Oh, okay.
So, Effie reminds her...
Yeah, that's not
going to
happen.
All right, back to the Hunger Games.
Okay.
Effie reminds her that she wants the audience to like her. Pretend they are your friends, she says. Because I can't do a capital accent.
That's so contradicting, because Katniss hates everybody.
Yes. She's just very cynical right now. So Haymitch is then puzzled how he wants to present Katniss to Panem during the interview. And he says my all-time favorite line by him, "You got as much charm as a dead slug." I love that line. That's like totally Haymitch. I gotta say, I'm loving Haymitch more and more as we go through these chapters.
Who's Haymitch? Oh my god.
Woody Harrelson.
Woody. I can't wait. Why do you do this?
Because I have to keep it lively.
Who are you impressing?
I don't know.
Now you're going British on me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And I talk to more British people than you do.
Uh-huh. I have British friends.
No, you don't.
We have British and Australian listeners, by the way.
You should send us your videos of talking to us. It's not like they talk to you.
I know. We can't hear their accent through their reviews, so. So Katniss is angry at Haymitch for telling her that she is sudden and hostile. Katniss gets over the top with anger and starts spitting answers at him. And in the end, Haymitch tells her to act humble, you know, how amazing the capital is and whatnot. And so she says this one line, which is my favorite line from her from this chapter. "I'm not witty, funny, sexy."
But Jennifer Lawrence is sexy.
God.
She is.
Or mysterious. Yeah, so we'll see how Jennifer Lawrence pulls off the non-witty, funny, sexy, or mysterious part.
Well, she did in Winter's Bone, she did. That was like, she was not funny in that. Did she try to be?
But I think Katniss is, she is witty, she is funny, she is, I guess, sexy, and she is mysterious. So it's funny how Suzanne puts this in when the readers don't see her like this, how Katniss sees herself so differently than the readers do.
Yeah. It's kind of like saying, like, you're always talking negatively about yourself.
Yeah, she's never positive. She's never like, I'm good at archery. Like, let me give myself a pat on the back for that, you know?
Because she's always doubting herself. She feels like she could be better.
So the Avox girl takes care of Katniss, cleaning the blood off her hands from a broken plate. And Katniss questions if she forgives her for the woods incident. And that's, again, going back to, I don't know, like four chapters ago?
Chapter three.
Where, you can explain this, right? where...
Oh, where they are.
Sorry. Okay, I'll do
Didn't
it.
Like
oh,
the
okay.
memory?
The of memory how of the boy bush. And the girl? Yeah.
Yeah, that was with Katniss and Gale in the woods, and they saw the Avox girl and the boyfriend running away from a hovercraft.
Uh-huh.
And so, the hovercraft comes and kills the boyfriend, and the last, thing that the Avox girl looks at is Katniss, and she screams, "Help me," and Katniss doesn't do anything.
Right, and then the Avox girl is taken away with the mm-hmm. hovercraft, mm-hmm. and now...
She's an Avox.
Now she's an Avox girl. So that means, Avox girl, your tongue is cut off, so you cannot speak.
Mm.
So you are muted. So... Why do you think the Avox girl has bothered helping Katniss so much? Wouldn't she be resentful towards her that she didn't help her and now the Avox girl doesn't have a tongue?
I think after, like, reflecting after what happened, the Avox girl understands that Katniss couldn't have helped her. Katniss couldn't really... As much as Katniss could have done, she wouldn't have made it in time to help her.
Right.
And that...
And there was... Even if she could go, there'd be nothing she could do. And this Katniss would end up in Avox.
And This is the Avox's girl's form of revenge, like, to the Capitol, to help Katniss win. So, right. And then she sees something in
Katniss. Help Katniss win, like, through moral support, because yes. She can't actually physically do anything.
Yeah, and that's sort of, like, she sees something in Katniss that can help, that she knows that this girl can possibly overthrow the Capitol.
Right.
So, she's trying to... help her as much as she can to make her feel that you don't need to feel any guilt, you don't need to feel any regret, because it's okay, I forgive you, but she can't say that.
So do you think the first time the Avox girl saw Katniss, and they both kind of looked at each other, do you think at that point the Avox girl didn't forgive her, but as time kind of went on, she kind of came to her senses and realized? Do you agree with that? Okay, because they can't see you nod, so.
Yep.
Alright. So the prep team wakes her up on the next morning, and it's Cinna's day to work on Katniss. Nails, patterns on her skin and hair, makeup, the works. So the dress is very heavy, and the shoes are not too high. And Katniss barely recognizes herself. The dress has gems of red, white, orange, and blue, aka fire.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, she just looks at herself, and she's like, wow, I'm beautiful. And... I think this is kind of like a point of kind of the girly girl side, and that she's always been a tomboy. She's always hunting and everything. And now for the first time, she sees herself as like a woman.
Yeah.
And she just sees herself, wow, I'm beautiful. Like, and she kind of starts having those, like, I don't know, like woman emotions, if that makes sense. If you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But, so Cinna says she should just be herself, during the interview, and that she's a fighter. And he said, answer the questions honestly during the interview and pretend that I'm asking them. That Cinna's asking Katniss to make her feel more comfortable and everything. So when did you see Cinna wasn't a bad guy and was really just trying to make the best for Katniss?
Well, I never thought Cinna was a bad person.
Never.
I never thought he was, because just he was always there for her. He was always there to support her, and when she was nervous, he was there. So it wasn't like he was trying to, as Lenny says... the manipulative kind of person.
Yeah.
Because he's not. I mean, he's... Obviously, we said this, he's manipulating through different forms, but right now, he's not trying to manipulate Katniss.
The way Lenny said it is kind of misleading, I think. For people that aren't fans, if they just heard that, they'd be like, whoa, like, very confused. But I think Cinna, at first, the first time you see him, Katniss is standing there, naked, and he's inspecting her, not to be creepy, like, let me keep going here, to, like, see what he can work on here, like, what he can make of her, almost, like, kind of starting her new and having her dress up and what he can do with the eyebrows and the hair and waxing, all that kind of stuff. So, I think at that point, when he starts looking around, it's like, I thought he was just another Capitol guy, but once he kind of starts talking to her, I feel like then you kind of start to see him kind of blossom as he's not a bad guy. So,
Yeah,
so Cinna gives Katniss some confidence before she appears live on air, and for the first time, Peeta and her aren't in identical clothes. So this is the first time they're not seen as a complete
pair,
and that they are individuals... That
not as
are,
a dynamic duo.
Yeah, dynamic duo.
Thank you, Hurley, for that.
So Yeah, so they're seen as two separate people, but they're still a team. They're still presented as a team in public, although they didn't, they weren't presented as a team training with the other tributes.
Yeah.
So, so Caesar Flickerman is the host of the interviews, and he looks the same every year.
I know.
Hair, okay. Makeup, and clothes. The Capitol has surgeries for age and weight. This was kind of randomly thrown in here. So Caesar Flickerman has these surgeries every year to make him look the same and that he's not aging, and so does a lot of the other Capitol. So last episode we discussed the cast, as you know, and I a certain image of Caesar specific image okay. of Caesar in my mind, but I couldn't find the right actor to portray him, and I finally did, and I'm still going with the Friends theme here, and it's the actor who plays Gunther on Friends, and he's the one in the coffee shop that all the characters hang out in, and he's like the waiter guy. And I think his personality on the show, I don't know the actor, like, in any other roles, just that role. But that character would totally, I think they're very, very similar. Yeah. That's who I pictured as Caesar Flickerman.
Gunther isn't funny.
Gunther is funny.
He's not meant to be funny.
Yeah, I know.
So he's like, but Caesar is trying to be funny.
I know, but I feel like they look. Like, that's how I picture him looking. I mean, obviously, you have to put the hair and makeup in there, too. But,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who I pictured him. So.
Okay. So, I got Matt LeBlanc and Gunther.
Yeah, he picked,
Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah. Joey on Friends, and I picked him up there. Anyway, so, back to the story. Katniss points out one of the girl tributes is taking the sexy angle, as a lot of them do every year. And so she's kind of taking mental notes of how everyone's dealing with this and what's their angle going to be. And Rue is dressed in a gossamer gown with wings. How cool is that? Wings. Mm. So Caesar compliments her, and she says she's really hard to catch. Not in a romantic way, because she's 12, but because in a way of physical that she's really fast. Mm-hmm. So at this point, Matt, what yes. did you expect from Rue? Like, what do you think her fate was?
I'm trying to remember.
The weakest, youngest. I'm trying to remember. With wings now.
I'm trying to remember this scene in the book. I didn't expect much from Rue because I didn't know her background.
Right.
Obviously, if the general reader is looking at this, you say, okay, she's 12, she's going to die soon because she's not strong enough. But obviously, the wings symbolize something. The wings symbolize flight, freedom, escape, something like
strength.
That. Strength, determination, stuff like that. And so that could be why. That's like a big overall generalization of Rue.
And also, the wings symbol, we have on the cover of each of, it's the American edition. I don't know what you have around the world, but the American edition has birds on the covers of each of the book. And the birds, as the book goes, is more free. So, and also the Mockingjays, the Jabberjays. A bird is a huge symbol in the series, and that's the Mockingjay pin. It pops up everywhere. So I find it kind of funny that Susan Collins picks her to wear wings to show that she's going to be an important character. Mm-hmm. Because she could have easily had, I don't know, one of those angel halo things or something else, but she picked wings for a reason, I think. So I thought that was really interesting that, you know, she's seen as strong, that there's something different about her. So Thresh is described as the District 11 boy tribute, and Rue obviously was the District 11 girl tribute. So Thresh is described with the same color skin as Rue, an ox-like, declining the careers. So he's seen as one of the strongest. He's built fast, strong, all of that kind of stuff. But he declines the careers because the careers, as you know, are a group that are they're the most fit. and strong, and they have all that going on for them.
Districts 1, 2, and 4, by the way.
We know that this time.
We got it right.
So, I think seeing how he declined the careers, you could also tell there was something different about him in that he wasn't in it just to survive, but that he was in it, that he wasn't going to go against his morals, and he was going to stay true to himself.
Right.
Him and Rue, you know, together, like, although they weren't presented as a team, they still had a lot in common, and that they kind of stood by what they believed in. So, during Katniss's interview, she has a dry mouth and very nervous, and she explains herself getting up, like, dreamlike, surreal. And so, during the interview, she makes sarcastic jokes, she Caesar compliments the dress and makes her twirl for the crowd. So, again, the girly side. That's, like, a theme for the chapter, girliness.
I don't think that's an adjective.
No, it's whatever. So she keeps her archery a secret. She does not mention that. She kind of keeps that a secret weapon. So Katniss has the most trouble with describing Prim during the interview. She says Prim told her, quote, to try really hard to win. And I told him I would. I told her I would. So that the crowd was, like, amazed by that and that how much she's going through and that what's going on at home. And so I think this definitely gives her an edge right away that the crowd really cares about what happens to her and everything because they see her past and everything that's going on in her life. So Katniss is still in a daze during PETA's interview, and PETA's asked if he has a girlfriend, and he says he's always had a crush on this one girl. And so Caesar's like, oh, you should go for her. You know, if you win the game, she's gonna, of course she'll go out with you and everything. And so he responds with, quote, winning won't help in my case because she came here with me.
There we go.
We need, like, romantic music right here. So at this exact moment, do you think he really loved her?
Yes.
Or really?
Yeah, of course. I mean, why, what kind of, obviously that's the plan that Haymitch was trying to say to her. Let's say he was planning with Haymitch, and that gives Katniss raising the questions, but you can't really play around like that.
But he's so charismatic, and he's a great actor. That's his strength. Katniss has archery, but he can manipulate the crowd. He's very cunning.
But I honestly think you can't come up with something like that without the other person knowing. And that's the whole reason, like, that was the element of surprise that Katniss got from it. But I can see right through, like, if your guy goes like that and just says that they really like a girl, they actually mean it.
But this is him surviving. You would do anything to survive. That's part of human nature.
I know. Yeah. But
so if this is the way that he could survive and go home to his family, and he has the skill in order to pull it off. Like, you see actors on TV fall in love with each other, like, they don't actually love each other, they're just playing the role. So he's playing this role.
But you don't know that he's that playing the role.
Right, that's the question.
To the audience, he is. To the audience,
this is him.
It's real. That's real, but we don't
know.
But
to him, it could, you know, like,
it could be real, or it could just be he's manipulating.
Right.
I seriously think
that. But as soon as you read it.
As soon as I read it, I knew that he was madly in love with her.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. I was thinking, like, at this point, as readers, we're thinking Pete and Katniss kind of knew each other before or whatever, but now they're kind of getting to know each other. And I thought this was definitely all fake.
No, but you need to understand that Pete has always admired Katniss. He's always looked at her during school.
But we don't know that yet.
Oh, well, I'm telling you now. He's always done that, and, like, the bread, what scene with the burnt bread.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, if he was just playing her and saying that he didn't like her, he would have just left her out there.
But, I mean,
obviously he's going to be a nice person, because that's the kind of person he is, but if he didn't genuinely care for her, didn't love her, he wouldn't have done anything.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I'm saying, at this moment of what we know so far, pretend you don't know the rest of the book, or series, for that matter. You're seeing if he really loves her. I thought at this moment it was totally a show. This is how he's going to survive. This is his tactic. But I think the first time I realized he really truly loved her was when he was talking about the dress Katniss wore on the first day of school, because you can't make that up. That was my fact to prove that he loved her personally. And like the cave, like, you know, once I heard that fact, I'm like, there's no way that he would have remembered that if he didn't love her.
That's actually really good.
Thank you. Like, I came up with that all by myself.
That's really good.
I feel like I've said that before, but...
No, I didn't think about that.
Oh, so maybe I haven't. It's all in my head.
Yeah, because you are... Yeah, you're going a bit insane.
That's the end of the chapter. Oh, are you still going on this?
No, I'm
done. No? We're good? Okay.
Yes, you killed it enough already.
So that's the end of chapter 9, right? 9?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I think that was good. We're getting better at that.
Yeah, we're 51 minutes in.
Which we'll probably end in 10, I'm guessing. That's my estimate.
That means we'll have time to play the whole thing. Yes, please.
I wish we get like a vote now.
It's so funny. Okay. So we move on to my lovely melodious music segment. I think about changing the name. I don't know yet, because I don't like the alliteration. That's all Kira's thing. So
I love alliteration.
If you guys have any ideas for my music segment, send them
in. For names.
So names, yeah.
Titles.
Yeah. So, because the name just annoys me. I don't know why I came up with it. So
try and pronounce it now.
I did. Melodious, right?
All right. You got me the whole thing.
That's Melodious music. Yeah. I said
Yay.
That. Yeah, okay. Yeah, man. So, every episode, I will play a song by one artist or a Hunger Games fan, yada, 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 based on the chapter of discussion. This week, we have selected a parody, which is titled I Wanna Go. I want to give credit to Winter Spring Pro, who produces parody, which you can find on YouTube and iTunes.
Buy their song on iTunes. Support the Hunger Games fandom.
Yeah. We will post this video under our District 9 tab, which is my music tab. And so Emily Wells submitted this song. So we want to thank you, Emily, for doing that. I know you've waited 2 weeks to probably hear this. So
no, like a month at this point, probably.
Oh, right.
So you finally get it.
So if you guys have any songs, favorite songs, original songs, whenever you guys have any ideas, please send them to us through Twitter, which is a Nightlock Pod.
Any way that we've listed before, or we don't want to sound like a broken Facebook record.
Yeah. So if you have anything that you want to send to us, feel free to do it. It's no problem, and we'll take a listen to it.
And we love parodies. Those are probably our favorites. Well, my favorite. He likes the little classical thing, which is nice, but it's not funny.
It doesn't have to be funny.
I know.
Classical music can have emotion, too, you know.
I know. I'm just not that deep of a person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, man.
So right. This is I Wanna Go, Hunger Games music parody by Winter Spring Pro.
So we're playing the whole thing. Don't yell at me. If you guys just want to tune out, then go for it. But I'm playing the whole thing. So
should we end with this? I'm just thinking that now. Wait. Let's end with this.
Wait. But we still have to play the trailer though. The end. No, we don't. We still have that.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah.
All right. Never mind. So we won't end with this. So don't tune out.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, right.
The song is 3.5. No, it's like a.
No, two it's minutes. Like, it's like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's that 4 minute one.
And it's really funny. And the video that goes with it is really funny too. So
that's gonna be on the website.
Yeah. If you want to check that out, go to the website.
Right. So here we go. I'm sorry, just if you look at her eyes, it's just too funny.
I am on fire. Gale is the
That's right. A really funny video.
That's great. It's so funny. I like how the part where Peter's singing, I want to take you to the Hunger Games, he's holding out like a piece of bread with him.
That's he's just, like, I'll bake you pies.
Just hysterical. That's my favorite line. That's just hysterical.
So that's Winter Spring Pro, and you can find them on iTunes and get their song.
Thank you, Emily. It was Emily Wells submitted the song. Thanks a bunch. That's fantastic. So now we move on to our final segment. We're bringing this back just for a little bit because Kira had some really good quote, which I probably...
Did you insert a quote here?
Nope.
You're supposed to have a quote.
Oh, well.
Oh, now it's going to be a crappy segment. All right. So.
Okay, well, let me go quickly.
All right. So.
Go. Just stop. Go.
So what? Who said that? This is our segment where we quiz each other and you listeners with who said the quote we will be reading. I'm trying to read this slow so you can find a quote.
I'm just keep going.
Since we focus on chapters 8 and 9 today, the quotes... plural.
Quotes, okay.
Will be from these chapters. So I chose a quote from chapter 9, and so you're going to guess, along with Matt, where that's from. You can't do that, never mind. So the quote is, "See, like this, I am smiling, even though you're aggravating me." I'll repeat it again.
So I heard you, I heard you. Peter.
Peter?
Wait, I can look in the chapter.
No, that's cheating. No. You wouldn't be able to find it anyway. Is that your final answer, Matt?
No. I think it's Hamish. No, Peter. Okay, you mean Peter. Yeah, Peter. Okay. Just Peter. Fine.
Peter. Okay. You're wrong.
Who was it?
Effie Trinket.
Oh.
Yeah, see? Wow. That was surprising, right?
Yeah.
It's not our best segment, but it's still... It's decent.
It's getting there. Oh, we never mentioned who won our dark duels.
Oh, yeah. It was a tie. 50-50.
Yeah.
So.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah. We'll bring that segment back someday. I don't know. We're doing kind of... We always have Pan and Post, Through the Eyes of Katniss Everdeen, and your music segment, Matt's Melodious Music. But we kind of have other ones that we kind of rotate in and out. And we have other ideas, too, once we have more listeners that will work better. But you don't have to get a quote if you can't find a good one.
Because obviously you're going to get them.
I know, because I'm just
probably
that good.
The one I would have chosen was, well, there's some room for improvement there.
And that would have been Gale, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Well.
Whatevs.
That ends it for chapter 6.
Not
pretty
chapter,
good.
Chapter
I'm 6. Chapter 6. What I meant you, episode no, 6.
Yes.
Oh, it's late.
It's six o'clock. Kira's going to bed.
All right. So, because we haven't said it enough, I'm going to plug our website, nightlock.weebly.com, which we actually didn't plug today yet. I know. I point a lot. So, nightlock.weebly.com.
Yes,
and you can find a ton of awesome stuff there. And it's all free. Everything we do is free just for you guys.
Yep. Not for us, but for you guys.
Yes. So our email is nightlockpodcast@gmail.com, where you can send us all kind of cool stuff that we can read on the show. And also, write us a review on iTunes. If you do one thing for us, that would be amazing. If you could write us a review on iTunes. We will read...
love them.
Yeah, on the next episode, we can read good reviews.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, as I say every episode, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe us on iTunes. So, and Tumblr is, I forgot to put that in there, Tumblr is nightlockpodcast.tumblr.com. So check us out there. We reblog a ton of Hunger Games photos and whatnot. So
Kira does, not me.
Yeah. Well, we're a team, right?
Dynamic duo.
Dynamic duo. That should
we're
be
not
the...
making, Hurley, we're not making fun of you. I just
yeah,
I
really, that's a cool...
That's cool. I can't believe you said that. That's the first thing you said. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's going to be it for today.
Yeah.
That's going to be it.
Oh, okay. Random thing. So you know how for episode 4 we named it Last Hope? Yeah. And how I was like, oh, Star Wars reference.
It's a new hope. New Hope.
That was kind of supposed to be my reference, but it kind of failed. But that's okay. That's, yeah. Okay.
I think we're done. I don't see the point in you saying that.
I don't
right,
know.
Okay.
All
right.
Before you guys get pissed off at us.
All right. So thank you guys for listening, and we're going to end with our fantastic
ending
music. I'm going to credit it.
One more thing. Can I say it before I forget?
Yes, go.
Okay. Literally, last thing right here. So, our next episode is going to be... Do you have a calendar? I'm going to go.
No. Do you want to just talk about nothing? I don't know what to talk about.
October 2nd. October 2nd. So, we do the first and third Sunday of the month. And that's excluding when the trailer will be. That's going to be... I don't really know yet. So, none of us know. So, the trailer will probably be our next episode, but our next scheduled episode is October 2nd.
Maybe we can do the trailer episode before you have our scheduled one. Because if it comes
Whenever the trailer comes out, we're doing it that weekend.
Right.
Because
I don't know what...
yeah, but we'll keep you posted on Twitter, Facebook, all that great stuff. So,
okay,
all right,
so
we're
now,
officially done. Oh.
No, I have to credit this because I said
this is the longest exit we've ever
I've
had.
I've said this before, but I need to say it again. This is our theme music is called Call for Heroes. It's by Pierre Gerwin Langer. So, finally, okay, we're done. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye.